You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Voters in Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb counties have plenty to think about for next Tuesday's ballot, including this. The Detroit Institute of Arts is asking voters to approve a renewal of the 2/10 mills that helped to fund the DIA. That's 20 cents for $1,000 of taxable value on a house. Let's listen to DIA Director Salvador Salort-Pons appearing on Stateside last fall after announcing the millage proposal.
I am grateful to the residents of the community. I'm grateful to the leaders in the communities in the Tri-County because they made this museum a much better place than it was in 2012.
Salort-Pons says the original millage passed in 2012 allowed for important expansion at the DIA.
In a world in which arts education is being eliminated from schools, the museum has become the number one provider of arts education in the Tri-County.
The DIA is undoubtedly a very popular spot, but as a multi-million dollar cultural institution in Detroit, it walks a thin line in a city where battles are fought daily over water shutoffs and foreclosures. We'll hear from a DIA board member in just a moment, but first, we invited Monica Lewis-Patrick to the studio. She's a resident of Detroit and longtime community activist, and she says she's not voting for the millage. Monica Patrick, would you tell us more about why?
Well, it's just, to me, a slap in the face of the residents of Detroit when we know that the bulk of the cost of the bankruptcy was on the backs of pensioners. When you look at 80% of that cost was on the backs of pensioners, to then have the DIA be disingenuous in terms of their commitment to uphold their agreement within the bankruptcy, that they would not come back for several more years, to know that then now they're coming back and we have not seen pensioners made whole. We know that many of them lost a significant part of not only their pensions, but then a portion of their annuities. They also lost about 50% of their health care coverage. That, to me, is offensive. And then knowing what has recently and what we've been working on for about 4 years now is to hold the city accountable as it relates to the overassessment and overtaxation of homeowners in the city. So to not respond to that in a way that's equitable and just, and then to still think that the residents of Detroit should bear another burden and another cost to maintain and culture in the city, we've done that. And we've been a part of maintaining that for decades. But I think that if people are wanting to have total say-so or majority say-so over these institutions and entities, then they should pay the majority of the cost to maintain those institutions.
The DIA, for those who need a catch-up, was part of the bankruptcy conversation several years ago, and it was posited as an option to bring cash to the city by selling art in the collection. That didn't end up happening. And as you say, pensioners were forced into concessions that had real ripple effects in their lives to cut down on the city's long-term debt liability. And this grand bargain was put together that raised more than $800 million from private sector donors and from philanthropic foundations and I believe some money from the state to basically separate the museum from the city's ownership and take that art collection off the table. Do you think that there's any way for the DIA to get out from under this negative association of having been spared while retirees sacrificed?
I don't think there is, not right now. I mean, when you look at over $600 million in overassessed taxes to your lowest homeowners in the city of Detroit, while what we know is what, 40% of the city is living in abject poverty. We are paying some of the highest water rates in the country. Over the last 10 years, water rates have gone up over 120%. You're looking at, even in at a modest level, according to the reporting, $600 million is a low estimate in terms of the financial harms to the residents of Detroit. So without responding to that, and in terms of asking the residents of Detroit to continue to tax themselves into another bankruptcy, I would challenge that. And I would challenge anyone that says that that's in the best interest of the residents of Detroit. And so my position is to vote no on the DIA millage. And our position is, until someone is willing to be responsible and responsive to the residents that stayed and paid in the city, that still are trying to hold on to their property and still trying to afford and access water, I would say no to any more millages.
We can't really know exactly how much money would have been raised if the DIA and its collection had been liquidated. But that $800 million that was paid to kind of ransom it from the city, I suppose you'd say. That really is dwarfed by the city's overall pension liabilities, which are in the billions. If all those paintings had been sold, do you think it would have healed the wound?
Well, we know that all those paintings didn't have to be sold. We know that the DIA has pieces of art that are valued at an estimated value of about $1 billion. But it wasn't just about the art. It was about the fact that the art and the DIA was used as a stick in the bankruptcy to be able to leverage a more divisive and very racial narrative of Detroit versus everyone else.
The psychological threat.
Oh, it's definitely a psychological threat, because what you have is you have a long legacy of institutional and spatial racism that has played out between Detroit and the suburban neighbors and residents. And so what you see over and over again is that when you have 70% of the people that work in the city of Detroit not living in the city, they are not feeling these burdens and these inequities and injustices play out in terms of their pocketbooks. And so their belief is that they are only buying into the optics of what they see in terms of the city getting better. But the questions that we have to ask as residents, getting better for whom? And when you're losing every time that there is something that's being advanced and you're not seeing the benefit and the connectivity to a better quality of life, then you have to raise those questions.
When you look around in Detroit today, are there other assets that the city has, either tangible ones, I guess, like parks or other things that you see that bother you in this way that have not been used to pay the price to help people who are most in need right now?
Well, for us, we saw opportunities all over the place. I think that what people fail to mention as they talk about the bankruptcy and what led up to the bankruptcy is that Detroiters and city workers and unions and community experts came to the table offering solutions and policy recommendations that actually would have generated revenue coming into the city. One of the things that we know is that being able to put on the table that pensioners and union came together and offered up concessions to be able to generate a cash flow for the city and to sustain ownership and control. We also know that in the bankruptcy, what you had is you had banks being protected and corporate interests being protected and served, but then you didn't have a commitment to make sure that the greatest amount of benefit to those workers and pensioners and homeowners and residents in Detroit were served. So as you were giving away downtown prime riverfront property for a dollar to billionaires, there was no connection to a community benefits agreement to ensure that jobs, contracts, and training were coming to the residents that still lived in the community. If we don't begin to tie bar these things in a multi-systemic kind of way, then what you see is that you see what is the optics of progress and the optics of moving forward, and then you're leaving out and cutting out other portions of the community that really should be the most important part of the conversation. So when I look at the fact that in a city that is investing in beaches and building out particular communities but can't respond to the fact that you still have a large portion of your residents that cannot afford their water, which then in turn is leading to a very secular kind of response in terms of not being able to afford their homes. Then when you find out, oh, it wasn't that they just couldn't afford their homes, they were actually overtaxed for their very homes. When the state of Michigan says that you cannot tax a home for more than 50% of its value, and then we know that some of the poorest homeowners were actually taxed in excess of 85% of that value, then that on its face is an injustice. But then when you have a government that says that it's supposed to represent you, it's supposed to represent the residents of Detroit, but is not willing to fight and litigate for what is the best interest of the residents of Detroit, then we have to push back against that and challenge what the real intentions are. When you have a judge, a federal judge, saying that he knows that it's going to create imminent harm to not really truly respond to an equitable way to provide sustained water and sanitation to residents, and then it's still okay to make sure you protect banks. And then what you find out from an article that if you Google water banker barons, it will actually demonstrate to you that many of the banks that were protected in the bankruptcy are some of the same banks that are buying up the aquifers and privatizing water around the world. So Detroiters are definitely the epicenter for what has been austerity playing out all around the world and all across the country. But we also are very concerned anytime that we are finding out that art and buildings have been prioritized over people and pensions and the ability to sustain a quality of life. This is not an affront to art and culture itself, because I think that one of the symbols of Detroit that makes it great is the fact that we do love art and culture, and that we have had a long legacy of investing in art and culture. But I think that when you have the separation and the lack of investment in quality of life issues such as access to quality housing, quality education, the lack of access to quality water and affordable water, then we have to challenge where we're investing our dollars and how we're committing to our communities.
Monica Lewis Patrick, thank you so much for talking with us about this. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
So what drove the museum's decision to put this renewal levy on the ballot in the first place? We asked the DIA to speak to us about the issue, and Mary Kramer is joining us. She's a Detroit resident, journalist, and a member of the board of the Detroit Institute of the Arts. Mary, welcome to Stateside.
Oh, thank you very much. Happy to be here.
I think the top question on many voters' minds when they heard that the DIA was seeking to renew the millage was already. The prior millage has not yet expired. Why put this on the ballot now?
Well, I think that the DIA staff could speak more to that than I can, because I'm not involved in any way in the day-to-day management. I'm on the executive committee, but my sense is that for long-term facility planning, long-term exhibit planning, we have a blockbuster exhibit this year, the Van Gogh exhibit. Those exhibits take years to plan and execute. And likewise, we have a long-term capital plan. You want to make sure that the building is up to snuff and that the air handling, all those different things that go into long-term facility planning. That's one of the reasons that having the security of knowing that the income is still coming in over a period of time allows you to plan more effectively.
An executive vice president with the DIA was telling press in 2012 that if millage was approved at that time, the museum would not come back to the voters, even if there was a shortfall. So what's going on here?
I know. I can understand why that would be a question or a concern. The person who was quoted as saying that no longer is at the museum. But even if she were, the issue is really that that was then and this is now. And what happened in between 2012 and now is this thing called the Detroit bankruptcy and the grand bargain. And basically, the idea at the beginning when the millage was passed was that the DIA would work diligently to build its endowment. And the endowment, the investment returns from the endowment would help support the DIA into the future. As part of the grand bargain, the DIA had to put its own fundraising on the back burner to raise $100 million as their contribution to secure a path to pay for the health care for the City of Detroit retirees. That was the bargain that allowed the DIA to secure ownership and no legal claims against the art collection at the DIA. In exchange, the DIA and many other contributors raised $800 million or so in endowment that would help pay for the health care of the City of Detroit's retirees. That's $100 million is a lot of money. And today, the DIA's endowment is at $245 million. If they had been able to continue to just raise money just for the DIA, it would likely be closer to $400 million by now. But it's not, because, frankly, they had to kind of take this other path and really secure the future for the health care and secure the future for the arts.
The grand bargain is still something of a sore spot for some Detroit voters. The value of the collection has been estimated to equal $1.1 to $1.8 billion if the art actually had been sold. Now, it certainly wouldn't have wiped out the pension debt, but Detroit's in a pretty, you know, still in a very tough situation, even at this point, this many years after the bankruptcy. It's not just about pensions. It's about a water bureau that can't afford to stop shutoffs. It's about a city so desperate for revenue that excessive property taxes were overlooked for years. It's not money that all comes out of exactly the same place. But in some people's minds, the museum really was not asked to sacrifice in step with the rest of the city. How then can the museum come back to voters and say, we need more help, right? And we need it right now.
For a couple of different things. First, this is a tri-county millage. It's just not solely the city of Detroit. It's tri-counties, and the entire region benefits. Secondly, if, in fact, there would have been an attempt to try and sell the art, many of these pieces had been donated by donors with the intention that this would be a part of the DIA collection. And there's a separate fund also from donors that is used to acquire new pieces of art. This litigation, in my mind, it would not have been cut and dried. There would be litigation on behalf of those donors who donated works of art or money to buy works of art. And this could have dragged on forever. That was the beauty of the grand bargain. It made a clean break. It secured dollars for health care for retirees. I appreciate and I understand the concern that there are many pressing issues in the city of Detroit. I've been a resident. I did not grow up here. I moved here in 1989, but I've been paying property taxes and income taxes since 1989 as a resident. So I appreciate that there are lots of social issues that face Detroiters on many levels, but I don't want to combine the two. It's not an either or. This is a standalone millage renewal to support the DIA, which in turn benefits so many school children and so many seniors in our region, as well as the general public.
I think the concern that we heard earlier in the show is that there are people who still have the luxury of finding beauty in Detroit, and people who continue to pay the price for living there. Do you think that the DIA's role will ever become extricated from that debate?
You know, that's an interesting debate because I was just at the DIA last weekend, and it struck me as I watched the crowds, it was packed. It was packed. It was a racially diverse crowd, ethnically diverse crowd, and age diverse crowd. And people seem to be, you know, I think in a city that does need beauty, the investment in public parks that has occurred in the last few years after the bankruptcy and the investment in the DIA, these are places of beauty. And not only for Detroiters to enjoy free of charge, but to be an attractive magnet for companies that are considering moving to Detroit. And they want to make sure that the city in which they invest in have the world-class amenities that they're expecting from a city that they're going to make that kind of investment. Companies now are in a talent game. And they, in order to attract the best talent, they have to have things like bike paths and beautiful parks and art museums and symphonies and club venues with live music, a lively entertainment scene. These are all things that are required if you want to compete for jobs in the 21st century. And I think the DIA is a big part of that.
Mary Kramer, thanks so much for talking with us. We really appreciate your time.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.